Yes, you've mentioned Terry Smith's work on derelict houses.
Yeah.
I mean, Pete Owen lived in Dyersville, right? Did you?
I sort of didn't know those guys. There was Pete. Was Pete Darkhurst with sort of a beard, yeah? And who else? There was Pete, and was Keith Coventry there? Because those guys knew each other, didn't they? And there was somebody else as well, Matthew Hale. They were around there, but I knew them to sort of nod at from the North Coast, but I just didn't know them. They were just a different group of people, and I think I've met them at a couple of openings, but. You know, hi, this is Pete, this is Steve, who lives in Dyers Hall Road. Oh yeah, where do you live? Oh yeah, yeah. But I didn't know what they were up to. And it wasn't, it's funnily enough, it wasn't, I mean, City Racing was so, it was so new, they'd taken that, I think they'd taken, you know, whatever came out of Leytonstone to another level, which didn't really happen in Leytonstone, strangely enough. And I mean, there wasn't anything, strangely enough, that idea of artist-led galleries was not really, I mean, the Adam Gallery was one, but there were so few spaces like that. And what they did at City Racing was really kind of prophetic and, I mean, a great idea and really, you know, it really did hit the mark. And, you know, just on the, I mean, literally, I'm sure around about the same time as Threes, like City Racing happening, which was a very sort of low-key, artist-led, slightly pop aesthetic, slightly streets, I mean, you know, on that level. And I think that was so sort of important in the genesis of that whole sort of Goldsmiths energy and stuff like that, and it never crossed my mind that those things existed when I was in Leytonstone. I just knew galleries. I mean, you know, we have to bear in mind that Cork Street was Cork Street was where it happened. There wasn't, I mean, I think Maureen Paley was doing things at Interim, but it was just, you know, all those were happening at the same time, and she was like slightly before. So City Racing was amazing. I mean, I wish I'd been involved in it. But I just didn't know those guys. I just knew them to none to. They were sort of artists in the area.
Because I suppose as well, like, when I got the Acme list of the number of artists that live there, I would see names and think, God, I didn't know that person was there.
Yeah.
And there's like pockets of groups of artists, really. Because you talked about, you know, you'd go to the pub with having friends that you knew and then see other groups of artists.
Yeah, I think there wasn't a... The way that things work, as you know, is artists generally meet other artists at openings, and, or in my case, through the Whitechapel. That was like not only a work relationship, it was a sort of place of, you know, after the openings we'd have a drink, or if we were working in the education department, we'd talk, or we'd meet socially, we'd have lunch together, things like that. And I didn't have that in Leytonstone. I mean, the Northcote was where people went and sat in a little huddle and talked about art or football or whatever they were talking about. And I wasn't involved with that. We didn't have, you know, that post-opening thing which everybody gets along at and meets people and makes contacts. It just didn't exist. You know?
Do you remember anything about Art East on Leytonstone High Road?
Yeah, I remember it, but it just passed me by. I mean, my focus was elsewhere. You know, I mean, you know, I went on to show at the Adam Gallery, which is Southeast London. I just didn't, you know, I was so, I mean, I was just there. And also, you know, I was late. I mean, the house we arrived at was one of the last in the street. And people had been there 3 or 4 years. They've been, you know. So we really were the new kids on the block, and I didn't stay there that long. Nope.
But you were involved with Open Studios elsewhere.
Elsewhere, yeah.
The Whitechapel, wasn't you?
Yeah, eventually, later on. But I think by which time I was either just about to leave or I left. But I wasn't, I don't think, no, I didn't get involved with the Open Studios with Dyer's Hall Road. I think I was just late in the loop. I just think I arrived late. And other people, you know, who'd been there, you know, it's at that sort of age and that generation, 2 or 3 years makes a difference. And we really were the last in. And I think we got 4 or 5 years. I mean, some people have been there 10, 12, and, you know, and there were blocks of people who've been there much longer than us, who I bumped into, and they said, oh, I was there from, you know, 84 to 94 or wherever it was. And we didn't have that. We were late. So, I mean, it was a very small clique of friends that just lived in our corner, like Georgina and Robin, Mark up the road a bit. And Mark lived next door to Grayson Perry, but I met him once, you know, and it was really back to the rabbit hutch and get on with life.
And can you remember any of the people's surnames?
Mark Thomas. And I forget his partner's name. Robin Wheelahan. He's now in Edinburgh. Don't know where Mark is, actually. Robin Wheeler and Georgina, I don't remember Georgina's name, I could get it for you. She's still, I've seen her around. I don't know if she's still making art or, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know any of the City Racing crew really. Wish I had, because it was a great space to be involved with. And also the other thing was, you know, City Racing happened right under my very nose and I didn't know anything about it, I just wasn't groovy enough. I was sort of slightly older than them, not much. But I just wasn't. And somebody went, have you heard about this place, City Race? And I went, you know, by which time it had been up in 6 months. Because again, it started, you know, word of mouth. And then by the time it had become popular, it closed, which is the way things should be. So I just wasn't groovy enough. I mean, they were much groovier than I was.
It seems like also that the artist run spaces, kind of quick turnaround in the sense,
yeah,
that they only seem time.
Yeah.
Because Art East, I don't know.
Where were they?
They were on Maidenstone Hybrid.
Yeah.
In a showroom.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, yeah.
Two big windows on the front.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing one show there, and that was the last one when I arrived.
Yeah. When did you arrive?
I think it was 1995. So they might have even been before your time.
They were round about my time, I think. And I'd heard of them, and it fell apart. I think the reason they fall apart is the reason the studios fall apart. And I think that developers, basically, and economic growth. And I think that time was, you know, we were on the, you know, if Thatcher came to power in 77, is that right? 77. And then we had all those years. I mean, you know, the boom economic growth was the early 80s. You know, and as soon as that happened, not just the M11 Link Road, but all those spaces, they just went because of economics. There was a massive growth. But there were, at that time, tons of these little empty places. And it seemed to be much more... it seemed to be easier to get a hold of them and do stuff, and people seem to be more conducive and all that. It seems a lot more problematic now. Plus the fact that people are doing that now, but on a commercial level, which we never even thought of. Never crossed my mind I can make money out of art. Whereas the next generation realised that there was a market. And, I mean, you know, again, with the rise of Charles Saatchi as a collector and a few other collectors as well. But I think it never crossed my mind that you could be involved in anything like that. And it's tons of it around here now. You know, what would have been City Racing or the Adam Gallery, or for that matter, Mario Fletcher Gallery, which was a commercial space, is now, you know, Keith Talent or One and the Other or Vilma Gold. I mean, they're our first, and they're completely involved on a commercial level. Whereas I think Art East and Art East and projects that happened in Wapping and around and about, they were just artist gambit, you know. Hey, I want to show my work and I want my friends to see it, I want people to see it. But we never, I wasn't conscious that anything would come of it. I was just conscious of wanting to show work and and have something happen. Well, I don't know what it looked like, but have something happen. So I think it was very prescient, if that's the word. So like innovative of City Racing to get on board that and do that and make it happen, you know, with a bunch of good artists.
Because also you could talk about those things as well, not just in terms of the artwork, but in terms of the renovation of spaces. In a way, artists are very good at that.
Yeah, yeah.
They have to do that. And then it just seems that artists get these houses looking pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
And then new development comes along.
Sure.
The
I mean,
in that area was the M11, and that artists actually did invest so much time, cheap, in actually doing quite a lot to those houses.
Yeah, I think you know, in the bigger picture, it can be anything. I mean, I recently, a couple of years ago, left my studio we had a studio in Tower Bridge off Bermondsey Street. Same landlord. And it was, when we went there, it was Crucifix Lane, and it was the most barren place on the planet, which doesn't seem like it, several years ago. And it seemed a bit dangerous. And then, people went down the pub, and this is what happens, you know, people go down the pub, North Coast, well, it's a nice place to drink, what have you, and then, you know, something else happens, and it becomes an area of, Hoxton, this whole swathe of thing that's happened around here. Again, primarily, you know, the first people in here are artists. Curtin Road, us, and the whole Rivington Street lot. And I think that artists are sort of facilitators initially for some activity, some sort of something happening in a community. And it's not long behind when I think, you know, having done up those spaces, somebody comes along and goes, hey, wow, loft living. Ooh, wow. People could live in Homerton. Hoxton, wow, I've never really seen this as a place of living. And it's going to happen here with this very building where we are now. I mean, it shan't be long before somebody's, you know, they're building something next door. And this happened in, you know, the M11 was different, but when you've got that many people living in a place, in a place that was, you know, I mean, Leytonstone's not. I mean, I know people who still live there. I mean, also, inadvertently, what happened is people who either got a job or made some money or something, they thought, well, where can I buy a house that has a sort of a community where artists are living and, you know, the pub is amenable? I'll buy my first house in Leytonstone or my first flat. I mean, I thought about it myself. And so these kind of things all sort of intertwine and lead to, you know, having a community. And we do that. And whether it's to do with that sort of fixer-upper opportunity notion we've got in our head anyway, sort of Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney, hey, we'll just put the show on here, you know? All we need to do is, you know, clean the curtains and we can make some lights. And that's that. We've been doing that for 20, 30 years. Certainly in East London, and we're still doing it to some extent, but it will go. I think that's going.
Because you talked about when you saw your house at the time, you felt it was probably the worst condition that you anticipated.
I was told by lots of other people as well. It wasn't just me.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it was one of the worst.
Do you think also, because there's been a whole history about artists in the East End that located in the East End, and then actually we were actually in East London. I mean, do you feel spatially there was kind of a difference?
As opposed to Bethnal Green, Hackney, Bow? Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was very conscious of it. One of the things that always struck me, and I was very, very conscious of it when I first got there, and it never failed to amaze me, coming out of the Leytonstone tube station, Leytonstone tube station, it felt like you're a commuter. The way the station was built, the ramp that came up, when you came out, birds were singing. It was a slightly different feel. It felt as though one would maybe in Leytonstone or Cockfosters or if it wasn't the end of the line, but it seemed to be just that cusp of where all those strange stations north of Leytonstone, like Epping and Wanstead and Hainault and Loughton, they had that feeling. And Leytonstone, I think, was the first station on that line that you really had a sense that, oh, this is a completely different community. And it was really just crossing with the tube line going from Leyton, which just felt on the cusp of the marshes. And when you came out, you were on a busy road. Whereas you came out of Leytonstone, it slightly tucked back a bit. And you came out and you went, almost a village. And I think Leytonstone had that, which Bow and Hackney and Bethnal Green didn't. Also because of the whole immigrant community, the whole relationship. I mean, Leytonstone's changed a lot now in Leyton, but it was predominantly white when I was there. I don't remember a community of Bangladeshi people or Portuguese or Polish or, I mean, it's changed now. There are more Brazilian and Portuguese people there. But I don't even remember a black community. It just felt predominantly white. And part of that white flight that a lot of people had moved further out to Loughton, and if you ever went there, it got whiter. And so I think that, I think Leytonstone, you're right, I think it was East London. The postcode E11, is that right? Yeah, it didn't, and I would go to the Whitechapel and think, no, this is the real East End. And there you had real galleries, you know? And you had like real artists were there 10 years before us, you know? They had Jammy Buggers, some of them actually, you know, did very, very well. But artists who were my elders, well, they had studios in like Old Street and off City Road and Chisenhill. They were like, that was like hardcore East End, you know? And we just felt like a sort of like slightly little sort of villagey satellite of all that, which I liked them in one way. But when I went to the Whitechapel, I thought, no, Whitechapel, this is where it's happened. Gilbert and George live up the road. And that felt, as you said, that felt like the East End with all its traditions and Jelly Deals and Tubby Isaacs. And we were a sort of like slight satellite of that. You're right. That's a good way of putting it. It was East London. It was never the East End. I went to the East End. I went to the showroom and I went to, you know, galleries in the East End. Yeah, good point. I think it was, and it was. It was, I mean, I guess 50 years ago, it would have been slightly rural. More rural, but it did feel a little like a slightly desirable commuter place to live. We had a garden, which is, you know, amazing, a long garden.
And did you do anything?
Well, we did until the dog destroyed it. We put turf down. My dad likes gardens. We put turf down and rose bushes, and then by the time, you know, you've had once you've got a dog, it tends to run around and churn up the garden. So that became nothing. So no, we weren't really. We should have had an allotment in hindsight, but it backed right onto the metro. That's really sophisticated. The tube train went along, and at night the radioactive waste would be transported. Do you remember that? Yeah, there's like trundling. What's that? And then somebody told me about that. Jesus. They'd move waste in the evening. So, yeah, I think it did. It felt slightly villagey. But with enough people around who looked like you and were just like you to make it not feel like that. But for me, it was always a commute. I always thought, and I always have, you know, I still see. It's not like, I used to teach in Tilhamlet and I had a student and they'd say, They'd hardly ever got west, as they said. Whereas for me, no. I would, at that period, in the mid-80s, I would go to Cork Street openings, and it would feel like the most glamorous thing. And it would be a long haul back. Or I'd go to the East End, and I'd feel like, that's where the real artists are. That's where I'm aiming for, you know? Mm-hmm. Bethnal Green, Whitechapel, whoa, really, that's fantastic. Wow, Robinson Road, cool. We were like little cousins, you know? Alice and the Boondogs.
You mentioned
That's a good point.
Did you get involved in?
No, I don't think so.
Did
I was.
You pay?
There's lots of things I did. Did I pay poll tax? I don't think I did. When was poll tax introduced?
I think it sort of came in around 89.
I think I was going to pay, I think I paid some of it. There was a sort of debate or something like, I refused, something stupid, like I was a refusenik, and then they found me and they sent me an ultimatum, one of those kind of things. If you don't pay this, you will have to go to court, sort of thing. And then I think I coughed up the dosh. So I was a bit of a pathetic refusenik. The poll tax, God, wow. And I didn't go to any of the riots, but I was in London that very day, and I remember seeing them. I thought, wow, this is great. But I wasn't involved in the poll tax riots or anything. I was just, I'm just strangely not a very political animal.
Yeah. I don't.
I knew of it, but I didn't know again. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. In my defence, I think it could be because that thing, we came so late. I didn't know what was going on. Didn't have a clue. And when we got the house, I was so focused on doing it, I became very, very selfish. It's typical artist stuff, but I became very selfish. I have to get this done. Let's do this. I said, come on, I don't want to be bothered with all that. I don't know what's going on. Let's just get this done. Then I can start working. Then I can... and then these letters would come through to the door, and I would, you know, I think I went to one or two.
Oh, you did?
I think I went to one or two with Robin, out of curiosity.
That's more than what I ever got to do.
But I think, you see, Robin was quite political as well. I mean, it's just that old sort of like slightly working class socialist background. And he was from Leith. So I kind of, I think we went to one or two just so we were informed. And then the rest was here saying gossip. And you know what? I didn't care because I wasn't like other people, and I knew it was, you know, it was finite. I knew. They told me, and I was just thinking, all I can do is what they've given me the license to do is to make art. That's what they wish me to do, and that's what they provided for me. If this goes tomorrow, I'll have made some art, and other things will have happened in my life. You know, my relationship, my whatever, and things will have happened in my life. Had I been from the start, I would have been slightly more involved, I would imagine. If I'd have had children, it would have changed my perspective. You know, if I'd invested more, it would have meant more. That's it. And I. Oh God, where was it? It was somewhere down. No, I can't. It was a hall, I think. Went with Robin one evening. Would it be down? What's the name of those roads that were beyond the station? The first generation, are they? You were off Grove Green Road.
Yeah, was it in Leighton?
No, it was in Leightonstone, but it was where Connie Parker lived. Might be for the, are they beyond the station? As you come out of the station, we were headed that way. Were they beyond? There was a first generation of artists.
Yeah, I think it must have been.
And I think there was a hall there, like a church hall or something or other. It was definitely that end. Because I remember thinking, shit, I didn't really know that part of. I didn't really know. They were a slightly older generation of artists. The first gen. I think they were the first, and I think it was there. The way I see it is like this. If that's Leightonstone Station, and you kind of came out across the road, and Dalzell Road did that, and I think that's Grove Green Road, yeah? Would that be about right? It's road there. I think they were over here.
I think,
and they might have been bigger houses, double fronted maybe. Mm-hmm. And I think they were the first generation. It was somewhere around, and I think the meeting was somewhere around there. Can't remember last. I can't remember anything about the meeting as well.
I mean, did it seem like it was full up, or there was just a few people there?
No, there's a few people there. It wasn't pathetic. I mean, it wasn't, you know, dribs and drabs. Good. And I think again, I think it was one of those things where I went to, and I've been to a couple of these things, where I just think, well, somebody's got much more investiture in this than me. And I did start to think, I don't really care. And I didn't, strangely enough, I didn't want to stay there all my life. You know, at that age, I didn't. So I would have been about, by the time I left, I was 30. I wanted to move on in some way. I mean, I thought like other, I mean, friends of mine who were in Acme houses and had the right to buy them, as some people did. That seemed like a holy grail. That was not a holy grail. That seemed like, you know, wow, it's like an El Dorado. It's like a pot of gold to own a house, only £15,000. But I think that would have tied me to things that I just wasn't all that interested in, like a mortgage. And I didn't, you know, I still didn't think of Leytonstone as somewhere I wanted to live.
Do you think it changed in those, 4 years that you were there?
It changed a bit. I mean, I was, it felt sort of, I think that, I mean, it was a sinking ship. I mean, it felt as though people were starting to, I mean, I was cool about the whole thing. And I actually split up with my partner. That's why I left. It wasn't to do with anything else. She kept the house. But I didn't ideologically think that I wanted that house for the rest of my life. I knew I was going to go, so I'd always consciously. That's why I was so, you know, building the thing was so fast and like, let's get this done and work very hard doing it. I really didn't put any roots down. I didn't plant any seeds, you know, to continue the metaphor. It just felt like a place to live that was cheap, that I could work and I could commute into town and I could come back to and I could. I just didn't feel any nostalgia because I just didn't. But it felt at the end that it was sort of sad. But what else was everyone was told? I mean, I just couldn't understand why. It was really strange. I couldn't understand why there was a protest. Had I been a council member, I would have just said, "Well, we did tell you." I was very pragmatic about the whole thing. I wasn't, and I didn't miss the Northcotes, and I didn't miss, you know, I slightly missed the fishmongers. And, you know.
Do you think if you're people who are not artists would think it's strange that one could invest so much time in getting a house together and at the same time they put down the roof.
It does seem rather strange, but it's why I'm not a very wealthy person, or I'm not. If I had that kind of investiture, could have been done on a £90,000 Georgian house in Brick Lane. If I'd have had the money and the will to work, it just doesn't seem like that when you're young. You know, you invest a lot, whether it be. I mean, I invest in this. I mean, fuck it, we've got no tenure, no nothing. You know, I've got, you know, if they say move tomorrow, bloody hell, we take time to pack up. You do, that's the way artists do it. We invest in our work, you know?
Well, that's what I guess you were doing when you were renovating your Acme houses. You were investing in your practice.
Yeah, I think so. I think that we do it all the time, you know. I mean, it's it's in my consciousness that I invest in my art all the time, but I don't have buyers for them. I mean, I might sell the odd piece here and there, and that's part of the way I was educated. You know, the chance to do something you love or enjoy, or you find challenging, is great. And I think that's tied into that. I mean, there's no long-term economic gain in any of these things. Otherwise, as I said, I'd be doing something much more profitable or financially rewarding. And I suppose the house was the same. We just thought idealistically, nice place to live, great place to miss work. Aren't we lucky? Wow. And also there was that as well. You know, if you were picked, wow, it's like getting a rented flat now from Peabody or something. Oh my God, how's it? You know, I mean, you actually feel you're one of the chosen ones. Not at all. Oh, interview procedure? I think we went to an interview. And yeah, we went to an interview. Maybe at Robinson Road. We went to an interview, and there we were invited to look at it. I think we're Roger Kite or somebody else. We were invited to look, and that's when, you know, and I think even he was saying, it's one of the worst ones, you know, you should know what you're letting yourself in for. We didn't know how, but yes, we went. I think we went. I can't remember whether we sent slides or not.
Because how did you find out about acne and
so forth? Oh, I was very good at all that. I was very good at all that. Well, what happened with me was when I did my degree, on my thesis, I decided that I should interview artists, living artists, about what it's like to be a contemporary artist. So I chose several artists, and one of the ones I chose was an artist whose work I liked that was in the John Moores painting called Jock McFadden. And I came to London to interview him, and he let me stay with him. So we went out and had some beers, and he told me all about what it's like to be an artist. That was what the thesis was, what's it like to be an artist. But it was all done through interviews, and it was dreadfully done. But I just wanted to know what it, because I didn't really, you know, until I went to Foundation, I'd never met an artist. And the only artists I met in Cardiff were my tutors. So I was interested in what, so I interviewed Terry Frost, Adrian Henry, Jock McFadden, and maybe one other, I thought it was four. And there were different generations, different type of artists, and coming to London was an eye-opener. And he had an Acme house. And one of the questions was, how do you get a studio in London? How does one get a studio? And I wasn't being ambitious, I was curious. How do you get a studio? And he told me all about Acme as an organisation. And so as soon as I came to London, I was very proactive. And I think the London Art and Artist Guide was out then, a little long, thin black one, which was really sort of like, a primer for when you've just got to London. So it had Acme in it and Space. And so I wrote to them. And plus I had a few contacts through tutors. From Birmingham and Cheltenham, and they kind of steered me in the place. But I just went through a formal process, wrote them a letter saying I don't have a studio, I'm working in a box in Cable Street, tell me about your schemes, put me on your waiting list, and that was that. So it was I think it was through finding out and going through it, and I think we had an interview.
Did you submit any slides of your work?
I think we did. I think that was one of the provisos then. You had to submit slides of your work. I think so. Gosh, seems so long ago, but I'm sure we had an interview. I'm sure.
How are you doing?
Almost there.
Tell me a bit about circumstances in which you left. Did Acme approach you?
In circumstance which we
left.
Well, I split up from my partner, so that was a completely, I won't say normal thing to do. That was something that happened, and I said to Angela, "No, keep the house. I don't. I don't know how long you've got." And she had several more years. I mean, several. She had like. When did they all, 94? Yeah, she had 4 more years there, three more years.
Was your partner an artist?
She was, but she kind of stopped.
What was her name?
Angela Rice. And she still lives, no, she lives in Walthamstow. See, yeah, I think that's the thing. She then, after that, she bought a house. Not far from, with the realisation that she knew the community, she worked in the community, it was cheap. And I'm sure, you know, she's sitting on a very nice house now, and, you know, a lot more money than she paid for it, whatever that means, you know. But, yeah, she ended up buying a place in Walthamstow. But she took a full-time job. I don't know. And I didn't. I got the Whitechapel job, which is great. But I think she just wanted different things. That's partly, you know, how we came to not be together. We just were going different ways. And then she'd stopped making art. And she would, you know, she was a very, really good artist, but she'd make very small sort of like watercolor swathes of objects and things like that. Really good, much more talented than me. I mean, very talented, but just got a job at Canal Leisure, not Leisure Centre, what do they call it? Playground, Venture Playground. Job there, and then she got a job in Kentish Town. So she bought a little car and she got there, and she really enjoyed that life. But and that was 5 days a week. So a completely different shift, and it's not, you know, political or ideological shift, it's just that's what she did. She just stopped, but she would be, I don't know what her take would be on it, because she stayed there right to the very end almost.
I mean, I suppose when you look back now, at that time, when, you know, that place where all the artists lived on such a big scale and the whole circumstances, little short life housing, and really the work that was sort of produced, do you think, I mean, you spoke about the kind of DIY attitude to
I wish I'd have been there earlier and been more involved. I wish I could do it again because I'd know more people. I'm a lot more gregarious than I was then. And it sounds weird, but I was shy coming into that. They all seemed like they'd been there forever. And I just thought, wow, I don't know anybody. And I'm not very good at that anyway. And I wasn't ambitious. I'm not really ambitious in that way. And I think it could never happen again. I wouldn't like to say that. I do harbour a dream of doing it. I mean, I hate communities and I don't hate communities, that's not terrible. I hate groups of people, you know, and I do. It's the Groucho Marx thing. I'd never join a club that would have me as a member. But I think that I think it will never happen again. But I would like it to happen again. And it could happen in another country. Something that needs change or help. I mean, you know, strange enough, the East End and East London didn't need it. We were all flooding into this place and it was a great conduit for the overspill at the East End and for a new generation almost, you know, coming in and moving and gravitating, and a great place for, you know, for energy on a certain level. You know, without that there would be no City Race, and there's no question about it. Without that there wouldn't be me and you. Without that you wouldn't be here and we wouldn't be talking. So really, really many good things. So it's fantastic that I was there in some ways. Maybe it's the cynic in me, I just do not see. I mean, however, I do think that the bubble of prosperity will burst, certainly artistically. And what I will find disparaging, and I get this talking to colleagues and friends from abroad, is that we no longer have any, I don't know. You know what will happen is, if it all falls apart, artists will just pick it back up again, because that's what we're like. You know, that's a metaphor for the building, you know, building of something, that's what we do. If it falls apart, we'll take on the spaces, we'll build it back again. And I think that there's so much money invested in, I despair sometimes, the lack of opportunities that, you know, younger artists get. Unless they're, you know, bought from college, or they're, you know, involved in Dick Smith Gallery or something straight away, or they're in Beck's Future. Oh, no, Beck's Future's, I mean, you know, they're in some sort of, you know, curated show with hot young things and buy a work from degree shows. And I feel it's kind of tragic, really. But I don't think it will happen, because I think there's just too much money invested in in the city, in London, and as we've spoken, I don't know where you'd go. I mean, does it become like, what's that place near Manchester? There's a place there artists went to or something. But I just don't know where we'd go. We'd have to, you know, hasn't happened in Newcastle. Liverpool, what a great city. Got this fantastic new space, A Foundation. Are we going to go there? Probably not. Yeah, they're educated differently. I mean, they are. They appear to be educated differently. I mean, you know from yourself. I mean, going into our colleges now, if you're teaching, the questions are different, and the beliefs are different. You know, regardless of the fact that, you know, there's no funding for poor kids to go to university, or they're finding a struggle. You know, I teach in universities now. Well, they're called universities, aren't they? Or our colleges, and I'm shocked by. You know, I never heard an accent anymore. And hardly ever. I mean, it's, you know, and if you do see somebody who's isn't able to afford it or is doing their best, they have to work and things like that. So I think this generation is pretty clued up. I mean, a great analogy I give you is a story is that a colleague of mine who works at Goldsmiths, she organised this person to come from Italy, and I think she's one of the leading experts on. She's great. She's really a bright academic, and she's doing a project, curating a show on, I don't know, something like Piero della Francesca or something. And she invited this woman. She put the notices up and everything. And it's, you know, I thought, wow, I didn't know about it, but I'd have gone. She's, you know, one of the world's leading experts in this artist. Seven people turned up. And the next day, it was Robin Klasnick talking about Matt Gallery. There wasn't an empty seat in the house. People were, I think students are just more, they're focused on those things. I think it's happened quite recently. They're focused on different things. We were like, I mean, Jesus, that was subsistence level for us. Can I get a studio? Wow, I get a studio. And the fact that I come to London, man, I did so many shitty jobs. And I think, you know, again, there's better jobs for people, wherever they are, but I think they're just focused on different stuff. They probably, you know, one of them would open a gallery in their house. I mean, what a strange construct. And that's something Maureen did. Interim, and look, you know, where she's ended up. But I think they're just, they're more focused, they're more organized on one level, they're just different. They do it so, they're much more entrepreneurial.
Like, in a way, maybe that's because our generation have taught them. Do you know what I mean? It's like that process of...
Because we're bitter and twisted and miserable motherfuckers that they thought, I don't want to be like that when I'm their age. I want something much more viable. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think we've taught them anything. I think we've taught them. But I think... No, I think there's a, I mean, I think our generation, on the whole, our generation who left college, yourself probably, I don't know, Clem to some extent, myself, people I think of, were the last generation of working class oiks to go through university with grant assisted stuff, and had it not been for grants, fucking chance, I'd have been working in a Boilermakers, or I think I'd have done like the rest of my schoolmates, I'd have been gone to an apprenticeship 2 years of that and become a plumber or a fitter or something like that. And we were the last generation of that. Now, I don't know if that is, I don't think that's a great thing or a bad thing, but I think it's just, we're very conscious of being very lucky in some ways. I mean, I'm the most bourgeois, you know, I'm so lucky. You know, I could go to Italy, I went to documentary at the weekend, I think, you know, I have a great, I mean, it's good, all that's great. You know, I'm involved in a really interesting way, plus I get to make this shit every day. I mean, that's pretty lucky. But I don't know how we could have taught them about I think what we did, I think we focused on aesthetics and personal development. Certainly when I teach, I'm talking to them about, you know, who do you want to be and what do you see for this? And I don't talk about strategies. But I think what happened with the whole Goldsmiths thing, predominantly to Michael Craig Martin, is very influential in that, so they say, in that field. And people became very pragmatic, and I think what he did was quite interesting, but equally as damaging. I think it's more a question of swinging Britain. I think it's happened with rock bands. It just has. I mean, I just think that, you know, it's a license to people think. When we were doing it, it was more of a kind of like, have I got there? And I mean, now there are so many conduits and places where one can, you know, put work or send work or, you know, and I think there's so many ways of doing that. Whereas, you know, going back to your Whitechapel thing, we were the last physical generation.
Well, yeah, because I think the way you talked about the Whitechapel open submission, really hands-on process.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Jenny Lomax's work, a kind of just general awareness of diversity in community. Perhaps because it was happening then anyway, because you had a mix of classes going through art school, which you actually don't get now.
Mm.
And perhaps people were much more, well, let's try this out, without preconceiving what might be the end result. So in a sense, it was like more process-based, where maybe now the emphasis is on the product. So people, maybe younger people would be thinking much more, right, okay, I've got this house, I set up a gallery there in the front room, I have my studio, and be much more kind of strategic.
Totally. And marketing. Not just product. I mean, I think marketing is an important, very important thing in this, and that's not a new phenomenon. We've had marketing for a long time, but I think the marketing of oneself and product has changed massively, and I think students are very conscious of that now. And there are more places in which they can do that. I mean, when we were at college, the New Contemporaries was a show that was like, we wanted to be in it, but we wanted to be in it because it was the New Contemporaries and David Hockney was in it. We didn't want to be in the New Contemporaries because fucking Robin Klasnack would be there. I mean, they're just more aware than we were. I didn't know a gallery in London when I was at Cardiff. You were at Nottingham, you probably heard of, you know, I don't even know if they had Angel Row then, they didn't. You probably heard City Art Gallery, that was it. And Cardiff was the same, there's like one Welsh gallery in a capital city. Waddington's was about it. That's all I knew of. And so now, I mean, good God. I mean, it's just Vina Street. I mean, the student, you go down to Vina Street on a Thursday night, openings, and it's, you know, there's just runty little students there. They all know it, and they might have a flat around the corner. And they all, you know, I didn't know any of that when I came here. So I think, I think you're right. I think they're more strategic. Not sure about the product. I think strategy and marketing, which are, you know, buzzwords for the 21st century. Strategy, marketing, publicity, location, I mean, all things that we never really thought about. And so you can get involved in so many different things, and hundreds and hundreds of, I mean, they're literally hundreds of galleries just in this area. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a new one just opened on Hoxton Street, White Cube, you've got Standpoint, you've got Art East on Rivington Road, you know, I mean, it's just around here, plus Vina Street, plus Hotel. I mean, there must be 20, 30 galleries, and those kids, they know about all that. That's right. No, that's right. I mean, I think that's very interesting. Had there been a kind of web community, I mean, you could build it now. You could build the Leytonstone web community on the internet or in sort of cyberspace. But yeah, there was no, that's what I meant, there was no forum, there was no communication, there was no locale where one could get. I mean, we're talking about this idealistically because we miss it. It would be good to. And we think this anyway, there's very few of those places. And the place that one does that are private views and the like. And we didn't have, there wasn't any.
And also, I think it was also a time before Brit art, and sort of Brit art really started to get attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember going to, yeah, exactly. I mean, the first Turner Prize, I mean, does anybody remember who won it? Malcolm Morley, American artist, 1987. And nobody gave a shit. I don't even think it was on TV. But you're right, with that whole Brit freeze. And also the freeze thing was a, you know, I remember going to freeze. And I thought it was hilarious. It was amazing. I thought, oh, you're fucking so funny. But it was, did you go? It was amazing. It was, I can't remember the name of the warehouses. It was these old, you know, warehouses where these guys are making, and it was shit. It was absolutely, I mean, that sounds terrible. I just thought it was shit. I just didn't get this. I missed it. Again, I just thought. I went and I was like, Damien's paintings there. Angela Bullock had like a Belisha Beacon flashing on and off. Mike Collishaw had that photograph with a bullet in the head. I quite like that. And those little things dotted around the place. And people just sat there, and I thought, what is this? And I said, what are they? Like, yeah, is it a studio? Is it a gallery? And then somebody said, you know, in fact, the person I was with was one of the education people from the White Chapel. And I thought, what's she doing here? Because she was like really well dressed, and she was completely out of her depth. It was somewhere I knew. I had to take her, as it were. And it was one of those places where, you know, you wouldn't go at night. And she had this look of absolute horror on her face. It was something like, it was really, now it's obviously a very, like Jacob Street or something. And she had this abject look of horror on her face. Seriously, she was just thinking, oh, this is really strange. And you wander down there, there you were in this magnificent old warehouse, paint peeling off the walls. They hadn't done a thing to it. They hadn't put any walls up. And I just remember thinking, why can anybody think this is half decent? They, you know, they haven't even made an attempt. Little did I know. I mean, I just didn't understand that currency. And from that has come this whole swathe of a different, hey, we can do it right here aesthetic. But now it's, you know, get yourself a nice Georgian desk, laptop, white walls, contacts, you're off. And client base, partners, things that, you know, and it's groovy. It's nothing sexier than art. Everybody wants investing in it. And you're right, we didn't, not just at the internet, we didn't have proliferation of magazines, you know, the media, you know, it just wasn't. And every Tom, Dick and Harry is opening a gallery. But again, you know, often legwork done by artists, as it were, or setting down some sort of groundwork. It's just, yeah, it's just different. I don't think it'll happen in London. I think also, you know, on a very fundamental level, which we are, the approaching Olympics, that's just changed. That's, you know, £4 billion worth of investment in something that, you know, that just will just change a whole area where I know a lot of artists live. In fact, the area where we used to live, it will just change the whole landscape on this massive, you know, and as a point of focus. Plus, take a lot of money from the arts, because arts and sports. So I think that will, I don't think that will happen. And I had a vague idea for the Olympics that it might happen in Homerton. I heard of people moving further out that way, along the Lee Valley, but I don't know. I don't think it'll ever happen again, certainly not in this country. And I just can't see it happening outside of a major city, actually a major capital city. Not a capital city, because New York it happens. I can't imagine it happening outside of anywhere but Berlin. Maybe in Berlin, but they do all right anyway. They don't need us, so they don't need that kind of community. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It won't happen. I wish it would happen again.
Because also around that time, you know, there were catalogues. I mean, there was one produced by Leighton Artist Group, you know, on the Shoe Stream. But people were shy and not producing catalogues.
Documenting, archiving, yeah, Right. There wasn't money. I mean, we didn't even know there was money. You know, it's only through Thatcherism and the rise of the, you know, the banking fraternity and the investment that came to this country. You know, the city, I remember the city in the early 1980s, it was a shithole. I mean, it strangely was. It was a sort of, it was the old city. It wasn't this magnificent Foster sort of Stuart Lipton skyline. That all happened in the, you know, late 80s. I mean, the whole Broadgate development was the late 80s, new investment, Canadian money, people invested. The Isle of Dogs, you know, you remember the Isle of Dogs. Terrifying place, flat. And we had houses in Leytonstone, Limehouse, sorry, and nothing there, you know, for all this money came in investment. So I think that's kind of, that's tied in with it. And I don't see that going away for a short while. As long as that exists, there'll always be this, you know, this framework. But I don't think, and there's money to make catalogues, and people want documentation, and people want glossy. It's interesting, I went to the Serpentine on Monday, didn't see a single person I knew. Icelandic artist, nobody's ever heard of. But the way it was framed in the Serpentine, it's a beautiful space, pristine, very lovely people, and the catalogue is so important. And I think text and images and catalogues and magazines for that matter are more important than the actual work now. Tragically. I mean, we bemoan, my colleagues and I, how hard it is to get people to come to the studio. Because they don't have to. They can go to Basel Art Fair, Frieze, Biennale, maybe Documentum, Munster, maybe something like that, maybe the Miami Art Fair. Nobody wants to come and confront or discover things, and that's the way things were always done. That sounds terribly old. That's the way things are always done. But I think I like that. I like going to... I mean, I'm curating a show in March. And I want to see the bloody works. I don't want to see them. People show me them. You know, this person I'm curating the show for, she was showing me these artists and books, and I was like, I don't know, photographs? Yeah. I want to go around the studio, and that's partly what the show's about. It's about discovering things in people's studios. And... that's gone.
When you lived in London, at Dythal Road, did you have any studio visits? Do you remember?
No, only from the person from France, from Nantes, who came to do Mind the Gap. I didn't have... I think Adam came. Adam Reynolds came. Mm-hmm. From the Adam Galley. But only those two, I think. And they kind of led to things, but I didn't have that many studio visits. I was embarrassed by my studio. It just wasn't, you know. I mean, this, it's terrible, but this is how I imagine an artist studio. It looks just like this. And then it didn't, you know, with a bit of plaster hanging off the wall. This is proper, you know, I've got shelves and white walls and fluorescence and stuff like that. There's, like, I think I put a fluorescent thing up and bits of plaster hanging off, and I put some plaster. It had a fireplace in it. It was like fucking rubbish. I was embarrassed by this studio. So I had to, like, one wall and, like, get pieces out, and I go, look at this one. Have a look at this one. What about this one? And that was fine, but I was a little embarrassed by, I felt a bit like a fraud or an amateur, because I'd seen proper artists. Well, no, I'd seen, you know, some of these, the people I knew who were at Chisnell and stuff like that, they had these huge bloody, you know, they were sexy studios. I thought, I want to be like them. I want a big studio with, you know, like a pinball machine in the corner or something. I thought that's what it was. And here I was, this guy, well, you know, which what we were all doing, it didn't feel like mine. I hadn't completely inhabited the space. More of me was downstairs than upstairs. So it's so strange, but they were the only two people. I didn't think that. And now, you know, it's hard. It's just hard now, it's a different aesthetic. Not really, but I'm still doing that. I mean, I still have a propensity to pick things up on the street. qualifying thing. So like that little blue thread over there I found on the street that's just coming into this piece here. So the little lip of blue. So I still do that. I still find things like that, but it hasn't gone into overload. And I'm still working, as you can see, with what would be considered poor materials. So there's that, but I don't think, if the question you're asking is, what was it informative in terms of how I'm making work now? Directly, no. But yes, I think also through the process of contacts. And strangely enough, the galleries, I have a show in December. The gallery I'm showing with in December is sort of like the gallery I showed with in my early days. That it's strange, it's sort of, you know, I don't know if that's, if there's something happened there, but probably not. But it's interesting who I'm showing with. I like them, I like their space, and they seem to like my work. That's it, that's the transaction. And that's exactly what happened first time for me as showing in London on my own, was exactly that. So I don't know if it's the same, I don't know. I think there is, yeah. You know, there's a bloody coffee table over there that I found, you know, on the street, which is probably the same thing I've done now. They're just sort of slightly heightened now and in a different place. That sounds terrible. It sounds like I haven't progressed in 20 years. But, yeah, it's elements of that. Elements of that.
You were talking about the show that you were
yeah.
Space Station 65,
yeah.
Which is an artist-run space.
Artist-run space, co-directors, yeah.
And I'm sort of thinking about, you know, what we've said so far, and this kind of hands-on approach, which seems to have never left you, and the desire to, you know, view people's actual work in the show that you're using rather than substitute the slide
I think,
computer image or whatever, digital image.
Yeah. I think talking the way you make it sound is you're exactly right. It must come from that period, that bunch, that area, that initial notion of innovating things for yourself, building up on things for yourself, getting on with it, maybe I always had that in me, but it must have been that it's not a very, you know, it's not the moment, but it must have been that sort of idea that shit, I can do something with this, I can see potential here. But I don't know if that's any different from somebody in a banyan house in Tuscany. I don't know, maybe we all have it in us. I can see potential here. Maybe it's in all of us. But I think, you know, I think what happens is, I think, and also the generation we're from, is I think, you know, one of the last great 20th century art movements, well, certainly in Europe, was Arte Povera. And when I saw shows like Gravity and Grace and Fourth Shadow, and it you know, it's kind of work I've always had a soft spot for, plus people like Boyes and what have you, Alberto Burri, people like that. And they were artists that I looked at a little. And then the Trazzaside avant-garde painters came up, and the Clementes and the Schnabels, and they made it all seem deeply sexy. I remember going to Schnabel's talk and thinking, my God, it must be like, wow, it's like, wow, it's so sexy, it's groovy. And he's wearing Versace, and the paintings are big and they're bold. But I knew that wasn't me, never was. And I knew it wasn't a world I'd like to, you know, wear Versace and live in a big loft in New York. But it just wasn't me. The things he was talking about and the way he worked. So I still think Arte Povera, I'm coming to a point here. But I think when you're poor and you need to, which we all ask ourselves, what do I make art about? What do I make it with? And if you have a practice like a painter, you buy the best pigments you can. And with me, it's always been, you know, I'm cheap. I'm a cheap bastard. It's not the case always. You know, I've had bronze cast and I still bloody got it. You know, and these papers are expensive, but I like that texture. I like cheap. And what do you make? It's often found things or simple things or black and white photographs or the best means you can afford. I know one should think. I mean, I do buy, you know, even to draw on, I buy expensive paper, but one should spend as much money as you can on making your product. I've always been cheap. I've always, you know, liked that sort of thing. And I don't know if that comes from being a Leightonster, but it's certainly a sort of East London thing-ish, you know, the reinvention, Arte Provera, that sort of thing, our generation. So I think it's always been that, and the two, liking the objects and the poetry of that, plus, you know, cheap materials to work with. And I think a lot of us, Nana, doesn't seem to be a dilemma, Nana. People seem to invest in a thing, and often I mean, something I'd love to do, which I've done. Some people invest everything in one thing, one piece of work, and it will look magnificent. But I could never. It's something I'm much too busy making things and trying to keep the process going. But yeah, I suppose so, yeah. But it's all, you know, it's all linked in one way or the other, you know, from cradle to grave, but a little bit slotting and out, drifting and out, you know. I certainly know I wouldn't, I'm not scared by when it says property in need of renovation. It doesn't scare me anymore. But I don't know that. I've always had that. Maybe it's just the challenge. But I wish that I'd gone into some, you know, I take that back. I'm glad it was a shithole. I'm so glad that it was a problem in the house. I'm glad we did everything we did to it. I wouldn't have changed anything really. But I'm glad that I learned all those skills. Feels better. And I'm glad we didn't knock the walls through, and I'm glad we didn't put sand the floorboards. I think it's good that, actually we did sand the floorboards, I just remember. Downstairs we did. I'm glad that I didn't do upstairs. I wouldn't do another thing differently. Yeah. So I think it has, you know, fed what some of this is now. I'm not that far away from it. I mean, I'm halfway. Money a couple of miles away, along the canal, and up a bit.
So I hope the redevelopments across the road haven't wiped away half the conversation, but I think that's a good place to end.
Yeah, you can sift it out, but you can always, if there's anything covered by a saw, you can always get back to me. We can do that last bit again later today. Or I'll transcribe it.